Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How will North Texans build a sustainable future? Evolving ideas about energy-efficient, environmentally responsible, and physically fit lifestyles have renewed interest in densely populated urban neighborhoods. The best of those communities use landscape architecture and urban design to bring a diverse population outside for regular exercise, recreation, and socialization, allowing for organic human interaction and solitary reflection. So what needs to be taken into consideration for new spaces, and what are the challenges of retrofitting existing shared space to meet changing demands? Don Gatzke is Dean of the School of Architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington. Architect Karen Walls is a certified planner, and serves as project manager for Vision North Texas. Both of them will participate in a panel discussion next month on community, culture, and urban design, sponsored by the Dallas Architecture Forum. Don, Karen, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
How does an urban environment shape the behavior of the people who live and work there?
Oh, that's there's a long
there's a one body hour of topic. Yeah.
We could talk about we could talk about that for a very long time, about what kind of behavior constitutes urban behavior, and it's sort of one of the foundations of modern sociological theory, is that people do, when they move to cities, develop a new way of interacting with other people. A lot of that has to do with kind of how do you avoid being overwhelmed by the numbers of people in cities. And so in the history of city, there's always been this kind of tension between being engaged in the public realm and being out in public, in which you are fully in part of the community, and then being able to retreat back into some sort of private space, some place where you can be by yourself or in control of your environment and sort of recoup before you go back out into the public realm.
So does that need for retreat explain why the pendulum swung so far the other way and now everything is very personalized, and people living in suburban areas drive directly into their garages and don't spend much time on the street, and it's an entirely different way? Is that a reaction to urban living?
A lot of communities over the last 50 years have been focused on a development pattern that helps people have that space of their own. And so I think over the years, the kind of development pattern we've seen in North Texas is typical of many growing urban areas in the U.S., and that is the idea that you have your own home, you have your own backyard, you have your own garage, and then you're going to go from there to work or to the store or wherever. What people are finding and what we as urban planners are seeing increasingly now is that people are missing the ability to connect with the other people in the community, that there isn't that same sense of interaction that you have when you're out and about and when you're running into your neighbors just by happenstance, or when there's a common area or a park or a plaza where everybody can come and everybody can share that space. And so increasingly we're seeing an interest in that. And I think that's happening both in the very urban parts of North Texas as well as in some of the more suburban communities, those that are further out, because they see that as a way to create something that has a distinct feel to it and a distinct community, rather than being just one of many subdivisions that all look exactly the same. It's a way to create an identity. And I think for sustainable communities, that identity is an important part of people feeling like they want to take part and want to get involved and want to help make sure that community is livable over the long term.
So is it a challenge to sort of retrain people who have become accustomed to very, very private kinds of living to think about coming back and having what amounts to a backyard that is shared with everybody in the neighborhood?
To me, it's not so much a matter of retraining as it is giving people more choices, because I think what most people still understand, that there is a need for people to have some private space, and that's something that I think people value and they will continue to value. But for many folks, they haven't even had the option of that other gathering place. And so as those are becoming more available, people are using them and they're finding out that it's really cool.
I think, you know, there is this issue of the pendulum between the public and the private. And that I think there is a realization among the public in general that the pendulum's probably swung too much towards the private. And some sense of community, some sense of engagement, some sense of a variety of experience that cities or city-like settlements provide. I think it's a kind of a common, increasingly common aspiration or desire on the parts of people, even those that have moved to the suburbs over the previous couple of generations. Richard Sennett is actually a very insightful writer on cities. He talks about Western culture being in the fear of exposure, that we've turned inward for theological reasons and cultural reasons, and we actually are sort of fearful of the cities. And so the more we fear them, the more we fear being in public, out in the community, in public space, the more we retreat, the more we then become fearful of being out in there because we see them as being dangerous places. But I think that kind of attitude that drove a lot of the suburban migration has swung back, and people do want to be part of a community, of a real community with real people, not just virtual communities.
So what attributes make people feel connected to a space that they use but they don't own?
I think a couple of things are really important. One is that it has to be a space that they can use and can use comfortably. One of the lessons that's been learned over the last 20 years or so about public open spaces is that there are some very specific things that have to be designed into them or people just won't use them. If they're, wide windswept concrete plazas with no benches, nobody's going to sit there and hang out. So there are some things about the design of the places that have to really function well and have to be inviting. The other thing is that I think it has to be easy for people to incorporate those places into their daily routines. And if they can do that, then they're much more likely to start seeing it as my place, as, my plaza where I sit and have my cup of coffee in the morning, or my open space that I rest after my jog in the afternoon.
Yeah, I would agree. It has to be designed with climate. In Texas, that means shade and some protection from the sun. You want to retreat from the harsh climate. And that has to be very ordinary. It has to be part of having a cup of coffee or on my way to work or back home again. It has to be just part of the fabric of life.
In a place like North Texas, realistically, does there have to be a lot of parking to get people to this place? And we all talk about wanting walkable cities, but is that can you retrofit for walkability?
I think you can. And I don't think, in many parts of this region, people don't have very much of a choice besides driving their car when they want to go somewhere. I think many of our cities are changing that paradigm, and many of the people in the region want to see something other than that. So we are seeing that change. But if you think about a place like Mockingbird Station, for instance, people can arrive there on DART. It doesn't necessarily have to have a lot of parking for automobiles. If you think about some of the places where you get on and off of the Katy Trail, there's not a whole lot of parking there, but there's a gathering place where people are coming because they're going to go walking or running or biking or what have you.
It's an infrastructure issue. The interest in transit of some sort of commuter transit that gets people out of cars or at least gives them an alternative to going everywhere in their individual vehicle generates a node of activity and a node of density, and then some of these other components can come along with that. But I think the challenge for the Dallas-Fort Worth region is how do we build nodes of density that supply some of these things that I genuinely think people are looking for, work with a kind of a transit system and a mobility system that that supports the non-automobile and the kind of the non-sprawl development.
The other thing, of course, is if you've got housing that's part of the area where that open space is, then, of course, people can walk there directly and they don't have to get in their car or do anything else to get to that space.
What about this idea, Don, of bringing people together of different socioeconomic backgrounds and levels? A lot of people talk about how great this is and how important it is. And then in practice, people get somewhere. And if people at the park don't sort of look like they might live in the same neighborhood, people can be uncomfortable from a variety of levels.
This gets back to my the Richard Sennett, who I cited a while ago. This reinforcement of fear of exposure. The more we see people as being different from ourselves, the more we want to avoid them. The more we avoid them, the more they seem different to us. And I think it's a significant challenge, and I don't have any great, you know, magic solutions other than to kind of remind people that cities have always been contentious. You've always sort of kind of fought out, maybe fought is too strong a term, but you've always kind of, jockeyed for turf and territory, and that's been part of the history of cities. It's also what makes them very lively and vibrant, and you know, it is kind of the basis for culture and civilization, is that engagement. So I think there is, in fact, as a desire to be part of that, to be much more strongly engaged in the community. But we've also got to make it kind of understandable to people that the conflict and the tension that's driven cities throughout history is not entirely going to go away. And that's, if you can see that in a kind of positive sense, that's what makes it an interesting place to be.
You're not going to design out human nature.
Exactly. In fact, we want to design for human nature.
Don Gadsky is with us. He's Dean of the School of Architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington. Karen Walls is here as well. She's a project manager for Vision North Texas. We're talking about community, culture, and urban design. We'll be back to this fascinating conversation in just a moment. Right now, though, we would ask that you pick up the phone and give us a call at 1-800-456-5372. Engage with your community radio station, the one and only that is here to serve you. Jeff Whittington is here now. He is senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And you know, this is a topic we cover from time to time on the show, and it's always very popular with you, the audience member. And if you appreciate a place where not only you can hear a discussion of sort of new urbanism, access, how people use the urban environment, what it all means, but also a place where you can get involved with that conversation on the telephone, there's someone waiting, there's probably emails in the inbox, then why not support it with whatever is an affordable amount for you? That's all it takes. You just have to decide to call 800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org and make your pledge right now. We've heard from a couple of people already.
John Lewis in Dallas, John Galloway in Richardson. Perhaps you are on the line now at 1-800-456-5372. You can also set up a membership online at kera.org. The easiest way to do it, fastest way to do it, is with a credit or debit card, but you can also set up a sustaining membership, which takes just a moment longer in the beginning, but really is the most convenient because then you never really have to think about it again.
Yeah, the way it works is you set up a convenient and very affordable monthly transfers from your bank account to KERA's membership account. And, you know, you can make it as much as or as less, as little as you want it to be. Maybe it's
make it, as much.
It can be as much as your ATM fees are every month. So, you know, you wouldn't even, or how about this, as much as the texting part of your cell phone bill. We were talking about that the other day. And, you know, think about when you spend $15 a month on text accessibility on your cell phone bill, think about $15 a month for KERA. You know, $15 a month contribution to KERA works out to $180 a year. And if you so choose, you could receive three of our signature logoed Think mugs when you join the station at the $180 level.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. The Think mug was actually designed by Jeff and by me, and we're very proud of it.
I don't know about that. I mean, we said
we wanted black. And then we let the graphic artist take over.
Yeah, right. Bob Perrineau here at the station does make all those cool designs, but... but we were very excited to have it on the TV version of the show, and lots of people have chosen to get one. You've already got one as far as a public radio station is concerned. It's your public radio station, KERA. Why not support it right now? Why not give some money to the station that you get so much from every single day? 800-456-5372.
If you are interested in the Think Mug or in any of our thank you gifts, you can, of course, ask the volunteer on the phone. They've got a whole book of things. You can also look at them online if you like to sort of go over very carefully and decide whether or not that's going to influence your decision. Most of the things we've talked about on other days are still available. So if you heard about something yesterday and you think, I would do it if only I could receive that gift, give us a call or go online now. The telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. We'll be back in just a minute with our discussion.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are here to talk about community culture and urban design. Karen Walls is project manager for Vision North Texas. Don Gatzke is dean of the School of Architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. What needs to be considered in deciding whether to restore a public space to what it once was, to remodel it, or to completely raise what's there and start from scratch?
You're looking at me. I think the first decision, are there enough people there that it will inhabit it as part of their the course of their day and their normal life to warrant any kind of redevelopment? There's also something about preserving the historical continuity of cities. There are great records of the evolution of culture and community and who we were and, in a way, who we want to be. I think that frequently we're too quick to want to if we think something isn't working exactly the way we think it should work, well, we tend to want to tear it down and rebuild it. And part of it is looking long-term at how cities grow and trying to hold on to some of the character and the history of the cities before we're real quick to redo it.
And I think from an urban planning standpoint, one of the things that I find most important in that decision is what is the vision of the community around that area, and what direction is that community going overall, and how does that space fit into that future? Over the years, I've done lots of different kinds of visioning workshops with folks in North Texas and in other parts of the country, and I think if you get that community together and they are part of that decision, that helps to clarify what kind of a space it ought to be, whether that's more of a historical thing or whether that's something new, whether it's a hybrid. In many cases, an older space might be principally a space with pavement or stone or hard surfaces. And more today, we're looking at how to bring back the natural aspects of our community. So it could very well be that that's a combination of that older, more formal kind of a space with something that ties into the natural environment of our area.
I think that's actually a really key issue, is how we deal with landscape. I'm involved with Karen on Vision North Texas, and we've had a series of regional and sub-regional workshops where we've gotten a lot of feedback from the community and, people representing all sort of levels and strata of the community. And I may be exaggerating it a little bit, but I would say the kind of common vision for the kinds of communities we'd all like to live in is the city out the front door and the wilderness out the back. And that can manifest itself as, a small neighborhood commercial district that has some restaurants and places for teenagers to go to and a place to get a cup of coffee and walk the dog if you want to go that way. And then be able to go also out into your backyard or out into parks or open space or back out into the landscape in some way. And for architects and planners to some extent, our image of what makes good cities are European cities or Eastern seaboard American cities, very highly organized, very dense, and kind of large nodes. And I think that when we look at the evolution of Dallas-Fort Worth, that kind of development, even if we double our population, isn't going to justify that much building. And so how we bring back the landscape, how we bring back the natural environment that fills in some of the spaces that we've kind of left over in this sort of thin, sprawling development, and make that accessible to people is really the urban planning or the planning challenge of the next 30, 40 years.
And that's a really good point, I think, for North Texas. Our region, most people don't realize how big a region this really is compared to other parts of the country. The only urban areas that are larger than ours are New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. We're the fourth largest in the country. We're much, much bigger than many of the places people think about when they think about urban communities. Yet we've grown in a very different way than those cities Don was just mentioning because we're a much younger city. And because of that, we have a great opportunity now. We are still growing compared to other places. We've got a lot of open space opportunities. We've got a lot of areas that have not yet been determined as to what shape they will take. So this is really the perfect time for us to think about how do we blend that open space, the natural assets that we have in North Texas, with very livable, walkable, identifiable communities. And I think that's a lot of discussion that's going on all over the region now, and it's an exciting time to be having that.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to James in Arlington. Hello, James.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. I had a question for your guests, more of just get them to comment. I've done some reading from some people who speak about urban planning, like Neil Smith and Don Mitchell and David Harvey, and I'm interested in their perception or understanding of revanchism as connected to the process of gentrification. And also I'm interested in kind of what they see the difference being between public space and open space, and, you know, kind of in terms of the level of regulation that's placed on these spaces and the level of surveillance. I went to a place in Allen, you know, and it promotes itself as a, you know, an urban living community, but there was so much regulation and so much surveillance and, you know, uniformed security officers everywhere. It was really an uncomfortable place to be in the end, and it just felt more like an imaged place than an actual real place. So if they could talk about that, I'd appreciate it.
Interesting questions. Thanks, James.
Thanks. Those are interesting questions, and they're real challenges, particularly because of the transition that we're going through now that Don was mentioning earlier. In many community spaces and public spaces, people who are just starting to come out and use them do feel uncomfortable and may feel worried about security. And that's one of the reasons why you see in downtown Dallas, for instance, the kinds of security cameras, the downtown ambassadors and other folks, to make sure that people not only are safe but have that perception of safety. And I think sometimes that may feel overwhelming to some folks, but the intent is to make it so that it is more comfortable for many other people to come out and enjoy those spaces.
Are those cameras the 21st century equivalent of, was it Jane Jacobs who talked about eyes on the street? Is that what we've been reduced to or elevated to, depending on how you look at it?
Well, when Jane Jacobs talked about eyes on the street, it was people taking territorial, proprietary, you know, we looked out onto the street so we understood what was going on because it was our street and we felt invested in it. So that was a very sort of positive way of looking at that. The surveillance cameras sort of take out the human factor. I mean, even though there's somebody watching the screens in some, you know, darkened control booth somewhere, those are people who are hired to look out for, you know, undesirable behavior. It's not exactly the same thing as people feeling that they are part of the community, part of the space, part of that fabric that want to then take care of it and keep track of what's going on.
I think the eyes on the street is a really important concept and one that really helps to explain what the value of the projects where there's a mix of uses, where there might be, for instance, a retail or restaurants on the ground floor of buildings and then residential above that or offices above that, because then you've got people around all the time and you've got the doors and windows oriented towards that public area that's out front. And that really does make a big difference in terms of security and in terms of people's feelings of safety and of security. It's an urban design issue as well, because you could have the same number and size of buildings, but if they're all oriented towards the back, towards an interior, you won't get that same kind of interaction.
You know, the best deterrent for crime and the most effective security device is having lots of people mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly everyone is safe because there's no solitude.
And everybody is under some level of exposure of scrutiny and public surveillance, yeah. But it's not done through a kind of
Big Brother's not
Big Brother's not there. It's just your neighbor who's watching out for what's going on.
Let's go next to Anna in Arlington. Hi, Anna.
Hi, I'm in Arlington. I wanted to give an example of a park that has recently been built in Arlington, which has proved very disappointing for many of the reasons your guests are discussing at the moment. This park is between Burney Road and Northeast Green Oaks Road. And at the time that we were told the park was proposed, we were all very excited about it. I live south of Burney Road. And I was excited that my children would be able to ride their bikes there because they're constantly complaining that they don't have enough freedom and independence, and they're 10 and 12. Well, as it turns out, only the people north of Burney Road have access to that park, and it is in the River View Estates, I believe is the name of it, and you have to drive through that private community, which is a walled community, in order to access this park, which is at the very back of that very wealthy development. And my children cannot ride their bikes on Green Oaks because it's too dangerous. It's four lanes, and it's being expanded for the football stadium being built. So if they want to go to that park, we have to go all the way around, out of our way, and a parent has to take them.
Well, I understand your frustration completely, Anna. I think probably a lot of people have similar situations, things that they can relate to. Even if the park is for everyone, it doesn't feel like it's for everyone.
There's a lot of challenges, and you've mentioned a couple that are really very important ones. One is the idea of connectivity, that just because you can, you know, look out from your house and see that park, you can't necessarily get there from here. And increasingly, cities have to really focus on making sure that people can access those public places, and particularly that they can access it other than by car. That it needs to be something that you can get there on a bicycle, you can get there by walking or what have you, and that's, I think, a really important part of it. The other issue is the gated subdivisions and those private areas. Again, there are some of those security objectives we've talked about before, but it really does create a challenge as far as a sense of community and access for people in the larger community.
I think the great flaw suburban development over the past generation or so have been the gated communities, but also in a larger sense, this idea that these neighborhoods, or what used to be called a neighborhood, is really just a real estate development, and they have very few points of contact into the larger fabric of that community or that city. So you've got real estate developments that only dump out onto Green Oaks. And once you get to Green Oaks, particularly if you're a child or a young person, that's the limit of your mobility. You have to get into a car. You have to be transported. We lost the sense of the overall pattern and structure that cities traditionally had of the urban grid or some variation on that, that sort of provided for a larger structure within which smaller increments of development could occur. We now take big chunks of land, we treat them as though they're isolated, and then give them only one or two points of contact into the larger realm. And that is really hard to overcome and to sort of reverse as these neighborhoods mature and develop.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. The email address is think@kera.org. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion right now with Don Gatzke and Karen Walls about community and culture and urban design to ask you to be part of the community of public radio supporters here in North Texas. The number to call is 1-800-456-5372. You've heard us say it before. If you believe that public radio belongs in your community, then we're asking you to be part of the formula that makes it possible. We all do this together. Some of us work here at the station. Some people volunteer at the station. Others support it financially. Every single part of the formula is critical. It wouldn't happen without any of those three things. We would ask that you take up a position as part of the big third leg of the tripod, which is listeners who support the station. 1-800-456-5372. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And yeah, Chris, you're right. Our jobs are to come in here every day and to make think. But we're asking you to make KERA. When you call 800-456-5372. In a sense, you are sort of a funding producer of not just this show, not just the show, the Anything Show on Friday, not just the Diane Rehm Show or Fresh Air or Morning Edition or All Things Considered or Car Talk, but all of those programs. Because we actually have to pay NPR, PRI, American Public Media, we have to pay them based on how many people listen to the station. This is, and I think you all were talking in the last segment about Dallas-Fort Worth being the fourth largest urban area in the country. And it is the fifth media market for radio. And actually, we're getting close to being the fourth media market for radio. There are many, many of you out there listening to the station. We know that almost 400,000 people listen every week, but about 30,000 choose to support the station as members. So we're asking you to step into that other column, take that next step, and help make KERA a reality with a donation at 800-456-5372. And I'm told that a lot of people, Chris, are pledging online during the show today at KERA.org.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. Maybe you are home with the ice storm, sort of enjoying a day off, and you're listening from there. We want to thank people like Howard Draper in Denton, Gong Yang in Plano, Del McLaren in Combine, Texas, Cindy in Fort Worth, Apollo Hardin in Hearst, Dr. Inayat Lalani, in Benbrook. Thanks to everybody who's on the line now. Think about how the things that you spend money on reflect your values. You know, everybody has to spend money on things that they don't necessarily enjoy. Nobody really likes to pay the electric bill.
Root canal,
exactly. but there are other ways in which you spend your money. Perhaps if you're a great lover of books, there's a big bill at Barnes & Noble or Half Price Books or any of those locations.
Now you got to name them all.
Borders. and the independent bookstore. But the point is, I think it's kind of a nice thing to see in your financial register that you are a supporter of public radio, because it probably is something that helps to define who you are within the community.
Just think about what you get from KERA. Think about the fact that when you call 800-456-5372, when you go online to KERA.org, you're helping to make this public radio service a reality, not just for yourself and your family, but for people that you really wish that they would hear some things on KERA, and they do. And a lot of people find this station every week. You're making it for everyone when you make a call, 800-456-5372.
We have all kinds of membership levels. You can decide exactly how much to contribute. But call the volunteers right now at 1-800-456-5372 or go online. You can check out Thank You Gifts if you are interested. And you can have the whole transaction done within about 2 minutes. The address there is kera.org. Back in just a moment to our discussion with Don Gatzke and Karen Walls about community, culture, and urban design.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are two experts in community and culture and urban design. Karen Walls is project manager for Vision North Texas. You can find their website at visionnorthtexas.org. Don Gatzke is dean of the School of Architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington. You can find them online at uta.edu/architecture. You can find us online at kera.org, and you can also join the conversation by phone at 1-800-933-5372. We have an email from Lowry who says, "My young family loves living in the village apartments where we can walk around trails and lakes and see people of all backgrounds, bump into the neighbors outside, and let the kids play together. But we have a toddler and one on the way and will eventually outgrow our home. Are there other communities in the area with similar shared public spaces and diverse communities?"
There are lots of communities that have those assets, and I can't really start naming one, or we'll be naming them all afternoon.
But they do exist.
But they definitely exist, and I think part of the thing to look for is to, as you're going out and looking, working with a realtor, be focused not only on the things like the price of the housing or the school district, but also on the things like what does that community's open space planning look like, because many communities in North Texas are placing a priority on trail systems and open space networks and those kinds of shared facilities.
When we talk about sustainability and then we think about, you know, sort of wild places and maintaining wilderness, I'm wondering how much in the 21st century these green spaces have to be maintained and how much that has to be taken into account when you think about sustainability, that someone's got to cut the grass or not or trim the branches along a trail.
Well, I think it's a continuum. I mean, part of it is having some part of the world and landscape and open space, green space, that actually is just taking care of itself. You know, it's just wilderness or as close to we're going to have as we're going to allow it to be within a metropolitan region. And then at the other end are much more urban, intimate spaces that do require a good deal of maintenance and upkeep. You know, one of the other aspects of successful urban spaces like Victory Plaza and similar kinds of city spaces is a constant programming of events. Mm-hmm. There are not a lot of urban spaces, plazas, parks that are really understood to be successful that do not have a constant stream of events occurring within them that draws people in there. It can be a wide variety, a wide range of the kinds of things that happen, but there's always something going on in that space, in that place, in that park on a regular basis.
There's a couple of examples I would throw out of places that are here in North Texas. Victory, as Don mentioned, that's a great example of a fairly intensive, very urban kind of a public place. Another kind of the other end of the spectrum is the work that's going on now along the Trinity River Corridor in Dallas and in Fort Worth. But if you go down to the Great Trinity Forest, you go to the area around the Trinity Audubon Center that just opened a couple months ago, that's the other end of the spectrum. It's a very natural area. That's the largest hardwood forest close to an urban area in this country. And when you go down there, you have an experience that is quite different, obviously, from Victory, but equally important and equally valuable to people. In between those two, there's a whole range of things, whether it's the small plazas and gathering places like you might find at West Village. But the open space and the natural assets of the region are increasingly being incorporated into the design, and the results are really apparent. If you go out to Rockwall and Garland around Lake Ray Hubbard, up until a few years ago, there weren't really very many places that you could go and sit out. And both of those cities have done a good job of developing places that are really people places right along the lake. And if you go out there today, there's all kinds of folks, all different backgrounds, enjoying restaurants, enjoying the plazas, watching the boats, all of those things. So we're increasingly seeing that in our region and seeing lots of support and interest for it.
Or along Arlington, along the Trinity River, putting in a plug for the River Legacy Park. You know,
it's not just Dallas and Fort Worth.
It's not just Dallas.
Right. It connects in between too.
we're the third node in here, but you know, all the way along Trinity through Arlington, the river is public access. It's open space. It's green space. It's a form of wilderness and nature, and really the Trinity would be the backbone all the way through the metropolitan region that I think would satisfy a lot of the desires for open space, recreational space, wilderness, authentic experience in nature.
Realistically, what are the limits to making this a collaborative process? I would imagine there are some people who sort of know what they want when they see it, but they couldn't articulate it. There's this idea that everybody comes together as a community to talk about what we want, but there are also financial constraints and bids have to go out and there are things like that. I mean, how public is the process by the time you're really sitting down to write up a plan?
That varies depending on the scale you're talking about. Don was just mentioning the Trinity, for example, and the Council of Governments, the City of Dallas, City of Fort Worth, City of Arlington, Irving, various cities have plans that relate to the Trinity. And a number of those imagine the Trinity and its surrounding areas as being something like San Francisco's Golden Gate Recreation Area. To develop something like that takes a great deal of involvement at a very, very broad level, and then action by many different cities, many different public agencies. That's one level. A very different level is working with a particular property owner or developer in terms of the design of a certain community mixed-use project. And that's a real different level of discussion and level of investment. The thing that I think is important to keep in mind is that that as much as possible, you want to make sure people are a part of that process so they will feel ownership in the resulting open spaces and the resulting public spaces. The other thing is that the research that I've seen shows that there's economic value for the property around those spaces. So when somebody develops a project where they cluster the housing and leave open space, when somebody builds next to those public plazas, the values of those properties go up. So that from an economic standpoint, there's a trade-off there. And if it's done right, it benefits the property owner as well as the people who are going to be using it as well as the public.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have an email here from Janet who says, I'm a visual artist and have lived in many parts of the country. One common denominator has been moving into low-cost neighborhoods. It's frustrating to invest in being part of a neighborhood and creating attractive livable spaces only to be pushed out by developers buying up property and gentrifying the area, raising taxes, and making the area unaffordable for the original inhabitants. What do we do about that problem about making things better only to price out the people who did the work?
It's a real issue. And, you know, I've encountered it in various places at various times. Again, I don't want to, like, you know, wiggle out of the question, but that is something that's a sort of natural phenomena of cities, and that things rise and then they decline and then somebody else comes back in and re-inhabits it and makes it their own, and then they get displaced by somebody else. And there is this sort of ebb and flow that occurs within great cities and has that's an historical condition. I'm not saying we should encourage it. I'm not saying we want to facilitate it. And there are strategies about how you, you know, zoning controls and development controls and financing and some things that to try to mitigate that. But part of it, I think, is a kind of natural process.
I'm picturing places like Deep Ellum and the Cedars where artists have lived for a long time and there have been those kinds of gentrification concerns and, you know, with development that's going on, that's more of a concern. Two tools that people have used elsewhere in the country and not as much in this region. One is in areas where there are lower income communities or communities, say, of artists, to create community development corporations and other nonprofit entities so that those groups and those communities can share in the value increases when those do happen and can play a stronger role in helping to determine what kind of zoning, what kind of improvements are going to be appropriate there. That's one of the things that I think is going on in other parts of the country.
To wrap up, maybe you can each briefly talk about what you think this area will look like, how different it will be. And I know that you do a lot of planning for 2050. Maybe we can take that as a target date. What's here now that won't be and vice versa?
Well, you know, this region, I said before, is one that's growing, that's big and it's growing. Right now we have about 6.4 million people in North Texas in the 16-county area that we're looking at for Vision North Texas. By 2030, there'll be 9.5 million. By 2050, there could be 12 million. That's twice as many people as we have today. So if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to lose a lot of open spaces. We're going to have many, many more low areas with low-density residential. We're going to have many more clogged freeways. I think that we've got the option, and what I think we're doing now as a region is looking to create something where we haven't lost quite as much. And instead, what we've created are many different sorts of very livable, walkable places and centers at different scales all around the region, and hopefully keep some of that open space. The pattern that has happened over the years here has been very much driven by private development, and that private development is the investment that's going to provide for the housing and provide the locations for the jobs. But at the same time, we need to think about what our community and our region want to be identified by. People of today and going forward are going to be people who can choose to live anywhere in the world. We want to make sure they choose here, and that goes back to sustainable quality of life.
Final thoughts, Don?
I think we're going to be a region of great choice of places and kinds of places to live in. I think there are going to be many, many more nodes of urban density, not just in the two major cities, but they're going to be distributed around the region. And if we're smart about it, they'll be connected by some alternative transportation or mobility system than the automobile. And then all of the space that we couldn't quite figure out what to build on, we've returned to some form of open green space, naturalized environment that links all of us together.
Don Gatzke is Dean of the School of Architecture at the University of Texas at Arlington. Karen Walls is Project Manager for Vision North Texas. Both will participate in a panel discussion next month for the Dallas Architecture Forum. The topic is community, culture, and urban design. It's been great to have both of you on. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone who has been calling this hour to become a member of the station, maybe for the first time, maybe for the 15th time or the 30th time. Whatever it is, we do appreciate your contribution and your recognition of the importance of public radio. You can join this growing group of people by calling 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online to kera.org. Jeff Winnington is here now, and we have, I feel like Jerry Lewis, something else on the tote board. Where are we now?
Well,
we just said it a minute ago. It said 169,000.
Okay, yeah. 169,000 raised. That's great. You know, Chris, we're seeing a real groundswell this morning, this early afternoon. Many of you are listening today. Many of you are responding. Thank you so much to people like Stuart Pastor in Plano, Shanna Head in Dallas, Mr. and Mrs. Theodore Mack in Fort Worth, and Todd Kamplin in Rockwall. And we're hearing from many of you online at kera.org. We're hearing from many of you on the phone. Maybe we need to schedule more icy mornings.
It's the joy of the ice
down
day.
The road. Yeah, if you got a little reprieve, or maybe you came in late to work today, or you're listening because you got the day off, or you just it's kind of a relaxed atmosphere, and you're having you have a chance to listen to the station, and you're hearing us. We really appreciate it, and we hope that maybe you'll join us as well at 800-456-KERA.
You may never have considered this before, but perhaps you're in a position to become a Friends member of the station. It boils down, if you do a sustaining membership, to $125 a month. It ends up to be $1,500 a year. Very substantial contribution from our perspective, but it may be something that fits very nicely into your budget. Maybe there was another expense that you've finished paying, and you really are in a place where you can support the station at this level. So give us a call at 1-800-456-5372, whether you want to become a friend or a member at any other level.
1-800-456-KERA, online at kera.org. Do your part, because you get something out of the station if you've been listening for years. I mean, I'll never forget the time I met Dick Wells, who is a friend of KERA, and he said, "I became a friend because I listened for 20 years and I never pledged." And I thought, gosh, I really owe KERA some money. And he's been a friend for a number of years. And, it's people like that that make KERA great. And, maybe you have listened for years. And maybe for many of those years, it wasn't in your budget to support the station. But it is now. I just ask that you take a moment, think about what $120 a year really boils down to, or $240 a year. It's just $20 a month. Whether you pay it all at once and think of it that way, or actually spread it out as a sustaining member, it's probably affordable for many of you. And if it's not, we totally understand. But if it is, and you there's a ray of sunshine in your heart when you think of KERA, why not call right now, 1-800-456-5372.
After all, this is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, K261, CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman. You know what I love? I like the day sponsorship level of membership. That's $1 a day, $365 a year, and it comes with kind of a cool little intangible benefit.
Yeah, you get three announcements on the day of your choice, provided that it's not already taken on the calendar by someone else who's signed up for a day sponsorship, where you can wish someone a happy birthday, a happy anniversary, just surprise someone who listens to KERA. Not a commercial message, but a personal message. We take care of all that for you, and it runs three times that day. It's pretty neat. It's a credit card membership at the $365 level, and the volunteers can set it all up. You just have to call 800-456-5372. You do have to call for the day sponsorship, because for obvious reasons, we can't just put it up on the web. If you have a stack of books, you don't have a stack of day sponsorships.
I do love, though, it seems to be very popular with proud grandparents. There are a lot of, I like listening to these when they come up, and it seems like there's a lot of, happy birthday, Joshua, you're turning one, I think it's kind of as much fun for the people who give it as for the people who receive it, which is nice.
Now, was that a day sponsorship message that you just said there? Did someone sponsor today?
No, I didn't hear anything today specifically. No, okay. I'm not. I've given them an extra one.
You're not executing a day sponsorship. Hey,
Mr. and Mrs. Stone of Rockwall, get in here.
Chris is giving stuff away down here.
No, nothing like that. But they are kind of sweet, and they're, you know, half the time I wonder, you know, is a 1-year-old listening to NPR? My kids do, but that's a totally different story.
Bless them. 800-456-5372. Online at KERA.org. Just take a moment right now. Do your part. Because many, many people are getting on board. You don't want to be left behind. Please join them. It's not a situation where you can say, oh, okay, lots of people are pledging. I don't need to pledge. No, actually, we hope that you use that, that influences you to go ahead and pledge. Because if you and you and you and you and you join right now at KERA.org or by phone at 800-456-5372, we'll end the drive that much sooner.
This is one of those times it's good to be in the crowd. So give us a call right now. Become a member of KERA. Renew your membership or become a member after a long gap. We're happy to have you anyway. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can also go online to KERA.org. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.